Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Joseph G. with the good news of 12-step recovery.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, thank you, everybody. You want to do that one more time? Thank you. That's very nice of you. I think I could do the whole hour just listening to applause. I don't know what's wrong with me. Well, that's enough about me. Would someone else like to talk about me? Hi, this is Joseph G. with the great news of 12-Step Recovery, Rum Radio, and rumradio.org. We're on the Sober Couch Network. Sober Couch is connected up. Sober Couch on Thursday nights with Joe Ellen and Sarah at 10 o'clock at this network. Fun Girls, really good, really interesting show. Oliver, who has the Half Measures Room, he's Wednesday night at 9. Oliver's got a real good take on sobriety. I know Oliver when he first walked in the rooms, and I guess it was around 10 years ago. And it's always a great joy to see somebody finally get it and watch their eyes come alive again and their spirit return to them. I wanted to thank WNEH in Nashville, Hoyt and Tony the Horse. We go out live under a feed with them in Nashville, parts of Tennessee and Arkansas. They believe that this work is a public service work to help their audience, to help their customers and to their listening audience that they love and work dearly hard for. So thank you, Hoyt, and thanks, Tony, for the work that you do in giving us this time. Want to thank recoverytoday.net. It's recoverytoday.net. It's a free magazine. You can subscribe to it in its hard paper form, or you can get it for free on the Internet, for free, recoverytoday.net. Some really good clinical and 12-step information that's you can never get too much good information. Of course, you decide what you can use and you discard the rest, but it's really good, solid information. I want to introduce my co-host, Harold. Harold's a family counselor who does a phenomenal work in bringing families together back from the grips of addiction and dysfunction. I believe that the family is the basic unit of our society. And so as the families go, so what will happen to our society. So thank you, Harold, for all that you do.
You are welcome. It's nice to be with everybody. Hello, everybody.
And tonight Joseph, we're going to do you have something, Harold?
No, I said Joseph.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank you. We have a little deal here. We try to coordinate by saying each other's name so we know when not. The only reason you listen to one man talk, so you know when it's your turn. So we try to be polite and give each person their due. And of course, it's the province of intelligence to talk, and it's the privilege of wisdom to listen. Tonight we're going to go over step one.
There we go.
Okay, I thought there was something else going on in the background there. Step one. If you remember, step one is that we have the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12 steps, I believe, are a gift from God given to the weakest of men. I think that's how God works, and that's what I've discovered in my studies and my spiritual life, that God gives he uses the weak things of this world to accomplish his end. And surely Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob were garden variety drunks. What's the term that everybody uses? Organic. they were organic garden variety drunks that you could find in any supermarket in the United States or anywhere else in the world. And he used these people to bring to pass the ability to help millions of people from a hopeless state of mind and body. Step one is the first step, and then, of course, the steps have been changed 118 times, I believe, by different churches and other organizations to fit their particular flavor of understanding. I ask the churches this, particularly mine. I'm in a fundamentalist kind of church, and I'm trying to get AA in there, and I ask them, they have to change it up to Jesus and Heavenly Father is the higher power, which I believe that's true for me. Jesus is my Christ and my Savior, but that has nothing to do with AA initially. It's spiritual kindergarten. So I ask them the question, if the 12 steps were not a gift from God, why have you adopted them? And if they are a gift from God, why do you feel compelled to change them? Of course, I never get a legitimate answer, if any answer at all, and people just go about their business. As a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. Everybody goes on with what they believe. Opinions, I've discovered, are made with feeling. Most people have an opinion that are based on feelings, not intellect. And, of course, when you have feelings like that, things are very slow to change. Now, step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. When is a newcomer ready to start working the first step? Immediately, if not sooner. I give out Clancy 7 questions. Harold, do you think we should go over the how to get a sponsee?
Yes, I think this would be a good time to get into that. And let's remind everybody that our focus on this hour and on the Rum Radio webpage that Joseph has prepared, these are activities from which he receives no income. In fact, he spends a bit of his own money out of pocket making this happen, but it's his way of giving back. And Joseph's focus, and mine also, is to help people really anchor their recovery in the spirit of the big book and the 12 steps, and that means action and more action, and there's nothing like working with another alcoholic to keep us sober. It's the best. That has somewhat passed by the wayside in times of late. They began doing that in 1935, so now in the new millennium, I think we need some reminders, and that's part of our goal tonight, is to help everyone really grasp the benefits we can gain by working with others or preparing to work with others. And so if you're new in recovery, give some thought to getting a sponsor, working the steps with your sponsor, so that someday you'll be able to help someone else go through the steps, and that will really help you. So I guess what we're saying is that by your willingness to work with a sponsor now, you're actually helping the sponsor as much as the sponsor is helping you, if not more. So let's get into that material, Joseph.
Okay, Harold. Bobtail on what you were saying, when you work with a sponsee, you're reinforcing your own sobriety.
Yes.
It has to work for both the sponsee and the sponsor, it works for neither. But we'll be getting into that. The guest call-in number is 760-825-0940. Again, 760-825-0940.
Call us
and tell us we're full of it, or you agree with what we say, or the world would be a very boring place if everybody agreed with me. That's for sure. Originally, okay, I put this little ditty together, how to find a sponsee. I can go to Skid Row. That I already know. And like Bob and Bill, there's always the hospitals. Now I hear tell they come in under their own steam, washed but not clean, desperate for simple instruction. The next time this golden opportunity walks through the doors, I will push and shove and help them find their seat so my own recovery becomes complete. I believe this is something that we kind of miss in AA. So, you know, January 10, 97 is my sobriety date, so 15 years. And what I've noticed in my tenure is that they don't go out as much to get the sponsees. Sponsees will come in, the newcomer will come in through the door, and the old-timers would have been just beating each other up to get to this guy. They didn't have to go to the hospital. They didn't have to pay his bill. They didn't have to drag him to a meeting, get his clothes clean so he was gave him a place to stay, any of that. They're coming right in, folks, with wristwatches and automobiles for transport. Not all the time, but a good part of the time. And then we're told them to come to meetings, hang out for a while, find somebody who has something you want, which I don't really know what that means. I didn't know in the beginning. And they kind of languish there. They were very proactive early on, very proactive. They went out and they got their man because they knew, and they even used the term prospect. That's a sales term, prospect.
Yes.
They went out and got their prospect because if they didn't sell them the idea that they too could stay sober, their own recovery was in jeopardy. Wow. I'm going out there. I'm selling this guy. I'm selling him my recovery, and now I could stay sober. And that's how it used to work. So now we kind of, you sit in the rooms and you relax. So my suggestion is you go up to the new guy, and usually the best time to do it, in my experience, is when he gets his beginner's chip. It's a little silver emblem. Most clubs give them out. One side it has to thy known self be true, and the other one it says it's a triangle. What is it? Service, unity, and fellowship. And it's an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours, one day. Can you do 24 hours? Oh, have you heard enough? Are you willing enough and you're in enough pain? Well, if that guy gets up and he gets, or the girl gets up, I only go, you know, boys with boys, girls for girls. I'm real strict about that. A lot of people, you know, I've had a woman ask it. No, I don't believe that's correct because sponsorship is a very intimate relationship, and it could be easily misconstrued. Not intentionally or unintentionally, I don't make any, why put more spice in the pot? You got plenty going as it is. So they get the beginner's chip, they're hot. They're ready to go. They've made that decision. They went up, they got up off their butt, they walked up, and they admitted that there was a problem. Wow, that's three-quarters of any solution is recognizing a problem exists. They get up there, and so right after the meeting, I even go around. We circle up and do the Lord's Prayer at the end, and we hold hands like a kumbaya. Some people do it different. They don't hold hands. They don't say that prayer, but whatever. We say something at the end to close the meeting, a form of benediction. And I try to get closer than the new guy, so I'm holding his hand. Huh? How do you like? You like that, Harold?
I like that.
I'm right there, man. I'm not waiting. I got him by the hand already. He don't even know me. I got him by the hand. He could be drowning, but I got him by the hand now. He don't know it yet. So right after the thing, I turn around to him and give him a smile and say, "Have you had enough? Yes or no?"
That's a great
question. Most people will know. Yeah, most people will. If they've had enough, they know what you're talking about. If they haven't had enough, they don't know. Have you had enough? So some I've had to ask some of you, had enough what? Have you had enough pain, enough humiliation, Enough time in jail. Have you had enough? Yes. Affirmative. Okay. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? Yes. Two affirmatives. I tell them you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. And the first thing I need you to do is answer Clancy's 7 questions. You think we should give him the 7 questions?
I would like to, yes. I think they are very interesting questions. If you're listening,
Clancy,
get a pen and paper. Take these down.
Yeah, okay.
They're also on the website, Rum Radio.
Clancy I, whose questions these are, I believe he's in the Pacific Group in California. Clancy is kind of a, what would you put, Cromuffin? But he's old. He's old, and he's been around for a very long time, and he's come up the hard way. He had a very, very hard story. You know, he wouldn't be alive other than for AA. He loves AA, and he has a lot of insight, a lot of wisdom and knowledge. Some people really love Clancy. Some people really don't. I think he's great. I've been shunned by him a couple times. and looking, well, because Rum Radio isn't really in his purview of understanding kind of deal, you know. It's not a big book that he can hold on to. Old-timer. And looking back, first question, looking back over your life, what memories are still painful, guilty, dirty? 2, in what ways do you consider yourself an inadequate person? 3, who do you resent and why? Be specific. What do you conceive to be your defects of character as you see them today? 5, what is the nature of the ongoing problems you have with people close to you in human relations? What seems to always happen when you have these things that blow up? 6, in what way do you believe that AA can help you with any of these problems? And actually, you could use, like any fellowship, you could use Al-Anon, you can use CA, NA, whatever. But in what way do you believe that AA can help you with any of these problems? And 7, in what way do you believe that AA can begin to change things? I need these questions, and I need them answered, and I need them back tomorrow. Here's my phone number. I expect your call. We're done. I didn't repeat all those questions. I either carry them with them or direct them to the website. And I expect him to get these the next day. Not the day after, not a week from now. I need them tomorrow. My experience is that either if I get them tomorrow, they're already into action and ready to go, or I don't get them and I don't see them. And if I do see him, I'll see him maybe a few days later, and usually they'll be a little coy with me around initially, but I'll just say hello and goodbye kind of deal. And then the deal is that they weren't either ready or they weren't ready for me to be their sponsor. And I'm okay with that either way. I don't chase them. I don't follow them around. I don't try to, you know, if they're ready, then I don't want to waste my time because there's other guys out there that do want what I have the ability to help them with. Now, I can't keep anybody sober. I can't keep anybody alive. I can't keep anybody, I can't get anybody sober, and I can't maintain anybody's sobriety. If I think I can, I'm playing God, and it's hard enough to play sponsor. All I can give them is my experience, strength, and hope, which is substantial because I do all this stuff. And most of the guys I do work with do stay sober. I'm nobody special. I'm a nobody. I'm a nothing in particular. But I have certain things that I know, and I would get through the steps quickly. I get these back, and the first thing, then I have a little thing. I need you to get a big book. I need you to get a 12 and 12. I need a writing tablet. And then I let him to get the Hamilton Beasley's sponsorship How It Works book, because I work out of that. It makes it easier on the both of us. I tell him I prefer them not to speak in meetings, Our goal is to get you through in 30 to 45 days. Not written in stone, but 30 to 45 days is a reasonable amount of time to get you through the steps. 30 to 45 days. Joe and Charlie tapes, Joe McHugh, he agreed, 30 days. Okay, but things happen. It goes longer most of the time, but that's the deal. No talking in the meetings. I suggest no talking in the meetings. By the way, these are all suggestions. I don't tell anybody what to do. They do follow the suggestion or they don't. That's it. I put as much energy into the sponsee as he's willing to put into himself. No mas, no less. I'll be there with him if he needs it. If he's not willing, neither am I. It's his life. I got mine. No talking in the meetings till you work step five. Why? Step five was the answer. Unless you'd spoken with complete candor to someone and they've done the same with you, you still didn't belong. Step five was the answer. It was the beginning of true kinship between God and man. So unless you did a fifth step and heard a fifth step, you still didn't belong. So five was the key. You work step five. Now you can talk in the meetings. One, you can talk to the solution and not just the problem. Only one step in the 12 steps talk to the problem. The other 11 steps talk to the solution we call a design for living. We live in the solution. We don't live in the problem. People love their problem. They polish the problem. They talk to the problem, and they stay in the problem. That's the problem. Okay, so now you can talk after step five. You're not going to never talk. If you have pain that you need to talk to, you talk to me, your sponsor, or you talk to another individual that'll keep them sober. Why no talking? Because what my experience is, when you talk in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, the pain dissipates. I don't know why it does. It just does. The pain goes away. When that pain goes away, so does the motivation. Pain is the fuel. We must embrace pain and burn it as fuel for our journey. That fuel will get us through in a timely yet thorough manner. I don't want to waste that fuel and you chatting away on stuff you don't know about yet. You got pain? Tell me about it. Tell another guy. Okay, so we got that settled. What else? The law of opposition comes into play. I tell them, as you're growing spiritually, you're going to be opposed spiritually. You're going to be opposed just like when you go to the gym. There's the opposing force is gravity. When you lift the weights, gravity is the opposing force. It'll build muscle and strengthen bone. You're going to grow spiritually. You're going to be opposed spiritually, like a butterfly trying to come out of a cocoon. The opposing force is a cocoon, but it strengthens the wing so it could fly off majestically. If you had opened it up and pulled out the butterfly would drop to the ground and die. So this is your opposition now. A bottle that you hid somewhere is going to pop up, piece of crack you couldn't find, a joint in the pocket. The opposite sex with your favorite addictional toe will make themselves known at during times of stress, lonely, angry, tired. That's when it'll happen. Be aware. Okay? Now we get into the first assignment in step one. How do you like that so far?
I like that a lot. What we're and for the listeners, just a reminder, we're not making these things up. These are ideas and principles that are consolidated from mostly the first 164 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the 12 and 12, which is another book about recovery from AA. And then we take these ideas and through our experience with other people, knowing what to expect in many cases, then we can consolidate these, and that's what Joseph is doing here. And on the website, the discussion of step one appears on the site, and that's where we are. Activities for the step, is that where we are?
Yes. We got a first the reading. Now we got the Clancy seven questions back. You know, they've answered them. you know, and so I make my darndest effort to get with them the next day. Now, sometimes things happen, but I do my darndest to get. They put in the effort. Now I have to do a commensurate effort. There's a law relatively decreed that for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. So their action was to do the work. My reaction is to be there to take it. Now we have the reading. They have the big book, the 12 and 12, Hamilton B's book, and a notepad. So they and that to take them with every time we have a meeting. I need them to take that. Okay. And then the big book reading for step one is chapter two, There is a Solution. And chapter three, More About Alcoholism, pages 17 through 43. And the 12 and 12, which is a companion or a companion to the big book. It's the experiences of the first 100 or so by working the big book. I think it came out, 1953, about 12 years or so after the publication of the big book. This was experience of this information, so to like a concordance would be to a Bible, to give you
there
more
you
specific.
There you go. I agree.
A specific, in the mouth of the second witness, the matter shall be established. The 12 and 12 is the second witness to the work. So we're going to read there. We're going to read in the 12 and 12, pages 21 through 24. Step one. The good news is that there is a solution. The bad news is, we're it. There's five questions. That's the way it is, folks. Sorry. That's just the way it is. What does it mean to admit something? Why do you think the step says we admitted rather than I admitted? What does the term powerless over alcohol mean? Write down a list of recent situations where you found yourself powerless, and what does the term our lives have become unmanageable mean? That's the first five questions derived from that reading. Specific reading, specific writing. Now, there's some really good sponsors in the program. Make no mistake. Big book thumpers, and they use the 12 and 12. They use materials that are program proven, and they're really good. They know what they're doing, and they have exactly out of the big book what they need. And what Rum Radio would do for them is they'll find certain tools and techniques that they might not have otherwise used. Oh, before I get too far afield, the other thing I ask them to do, and this is mucho importante. I got this from what's his name now? It'll come to me. The first 30 days, I want them to call someone on their beginner's list. There's a beginner's packet. People sign their names. Usually some clubs just send out pieces of paper. Beginner's packet would have pamphlets in it and, you know, about alcoholism, sponsorship, where the local meetings are held and the times, things like that. Names for temporary sponsors, develops a lifeline. Somebody on that beginner's packet, they write their names, men for men, women for women. For the next 30 days, I want you to call somebody different every day on that list and ask them permission to recite the Serenity Prayer found on page, 63?
Yes.
62 or 63. Yeah, I think it is 63. And they recite the third step prayer. Let's see. And ask permission. And the reason I have them do that is to get them used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. What I found is that service is one end of a spiritual concept, and the polarity to that concept is graciousness, the ability to allow someone to serve you. Each person is dependent upon the other, and neither party is edified unless both agree. So now you get the alcoholic picking up the telephone, the newcomer asking if they could recite the third step prayer. I find this to be very rewarding for both the newcomer, for the guy making the call, and the people he's calling. And the reason why, okay, the first, he's used to picking up the phone. He's connecting up in his primary fellowship. They're getting to know his name. You're getting to know their name. The third-step prayer incorporates, encapsulates what we're going to accomplish by working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and maybe, just maybe, the call he made to an alcoholic, that alcoholic might have been thinking about taking his first drink of alcohol, and when you call, he will not, hopefully. So that's, and then you call me every day for 90 days, and so we're developing a relationship. Not codependent, but a dependent relationship. I depend on him, he depends on me, and that's how we work the steps. Harold?
That's terrific. It really helps me to know and to just review what things to do, what things to remember back about what things helped me. I had a great sponsor as my first, I had a Frenchman as my temporary sponsor, my first one, and then a big fellow, Paul, and he was my first full-time sponsor, a real big book thumper, and we went through all these things, all these activities, and it really sets a standard. Excellence was his standard, and we stuck to the book, and we did all of this. I don't ask any sponsee to do things that I didn't do. That's only fair, I think. So let's continue with the material.
All right. Once we have that done and we start the now we're getting into the steps. But you see, this has really set a platform of understanding. And I think that's why there's a good chance of a greater chance of success this way. Because we're building a foundation, a solid foundation that these men can walk through, free men.
Yes.
And I think that's really the key to this thing, you know. And then by helping him, you know, I'm staying sober. That's one. And two, I'm learning to give back. And the more you do that, the more you like doing that. Even though I'm doing the rum radio and I do the writing and I, you know, do that other stuff, I still always make sure that I'm working with at least one sponsee. Always. And the reason I do that because if you think you could change the world, it's either grandiose romanticism or politics. You can only change the world one guy at a time. Activities, okay, we're going to make a list of examples of your powerlessness over alcohol or your favorite flavor of addiction, compulsive behavior, where you tried to manage well and could not despite your best efforts. Make a specific list of specific examples how your life has become unmanageable. A list of other people managing your life does not count. Jail. I said my life had never become unmanageable. I always had someone to manage it. A jailer, judge, asylum, a keeper, an ex-wife, divorce attorneys. There was always somebody more than happy to manage my life. Everyone but me. Step one is the only.
Yes, and I always had a higher power, usually a spouse. It took me quite a while to get a higher power that was something helpful and not a big mistake.
It says that the men don't have to worry about their fate. The women in their lives usually take care of that for them. At church Sunday, they were going over stuff about the Apostle Paul, and he said women should listen to their husbands, and I think he made a statement, women should not speak in meetings. They didn't even get into that. That's usually very touchy around women. And the teacher turned around and said, what does that tell us about Paul? And I chirped out that he was single.
Couldn't be a Pharisee in his time and be single. You had to have a wife and kids.
He wasn't. He wasn't in No, you could be a Pharisee without being married. You couldn't be in the Sanhedrin without being married. You're talking about being in the Sanhedrin. There were single Pharisees.
Oh.
You couldn't be in the Sanhedrin if you you had to be married to be in the Sanhedrin. There were single Pharisees. The guys, some guys didn't, weren't married yet or divorced or, you know, widowed or all of that. So that's what you're talking about. And he was not a member of the Sanhedrin. Yeah, I studied this stuff. Anyway, so my opinion is, and I looked in the scriptures, there's one scripture that possibly says that he's claiming his wife should accompany the apostles when they go on their trips. But other than that, there's no indication whatsoever in any way, shape, or form that he was a married man. Maybe he was married at one time and a widower, but nothing's ever been cleared up with that. There's not all, I checked. Thank goodness for Google. the library at Alexandria at your fingertips. Let me give you the guest call-in number, 760-825-0940. Again, 760-825-0940. So we're making our list. We're checking it twice. Step one is the only step that has to be practiced with absolute perfection. Whoa. Step one is the only step that identifies the problem, the addiction or to alcohol, whatever your particular flavor of addiction you're dealing with. The other, it should be noted that step one is the only step that deals with the problem. The other 11 steps deal with the solution. I suggest to my sponsees when they share in the meeting, after step five, to keep those percentages in mind. 1/12th is the problem, 11/12th is the solution. We live in the solution, not in the problem. Step one has to be taken on an emotional level. In my experience, there's a tendency of most sponsees to intellectualize the process of surrendering to a more powerful foe. It is both painful and fearful to admit defeat. All of our reasoning ends in surrender to feeling, Pascal. And in the early days of AA, your courage started what was called a surrender. Are you familiar with that, Harold?
Yes, this is a very, very crucial, very important area, principle to focus on. I meet so many people who live by their feelings, fail to mix in any logic really, and what a recipe for defeat and pain. I agree, Joseph.
In the early days of AA, your recovery started with what was called the surrender. The surrender was more than important. It was a must. Bob E., who came into AA in February 1937, recalled that after 5 or 6 days in the hospital, when you indicated that you were serious and they told you to get down on your knees by the bed and say a prayer to God, admitting your powerlessness over alcohol and your life was unmanageable. Furthermore, you had to say that you believed in a higher power. So what are we doing here? We're doing the first three steps. Who would return you to sanity? There you could see the beginning of the 12 steps. You said we call that the surrender. They, Dr. Bob and the original AA members, demanded it. You couldn't go to a meeting until you did it. If by accident you didn't make it in the hospital, you had to make it in the upstairs bedroom over at the Oxford Group AA meeting or at the Williams House. After the surrender, many of the steps involving inventory, admissions of character defects, and making restitutions were taken within a matter of days. As the Big Book refers to it as utter defeat, bankruptcy, hopelessness, and hitting bottom. Hitting bottom is relative to the individual. Two alcoholics were under a bridge. One was lamenting his past life, a professional man with all the trappings, a beautiful wife, home, car, and position in the community, now reduced to living in a Lady Kenmore cardboard refrigerator box. The other alcoholic quips, "Wow, man, you got a box?" We have learned whatever the bottom is, and it takes what it takes. I could just hear the alcoholics when they did away with the surrender. Could you hear? Can you hear from the grave? Oh no, they're gonna kill. They ruined this thing. Oh, we had it perfect. What's wrong with these people? We don't like change.
Based on experience, I've been to many, many funerals over my 23 years. And this is a life and death struggle. And we cannot go tampering with something that's time-tested. I went to the university, Portland State University, and one of my special focuses was groups. What sorts of groups help people? What groups don't help, actually make things worse? We covered a lot of material, but one of the things they could not figure out is why AA works so well. It works twice as well as anything that anyone else has been able to come up with as far as healing and therapy and improving one's life. And the AA groups are leaderless. There's no professional there. There's no authority. And it works fantastically. The leadership is rotating. And they study and study. They puzzle over this. They cannot figure out why. So each puzzle piece that we're talking about here is vitally important to make this thing work. If you take a cake recipe and change it, you cannot hope to come out with a cake that's successful. And so I really like the way that you on the website and we on this program adhere to the original ideas, the way it was laid down in the book, and return back to basics, because it works. You cannot argue with results. And so I appreciate that, Joseph.
The question is, why must it be overwhelming, raw, and exhaustive? In the 12 and 12, it states, few people would sincerely try to practice the AA program unless they've hit bottom. Who wishes to be rigorously honest, tolerant? Who wants to confess their faults to another and make restitution for harm done? Who cares about a higher power, let alone meditation and prayer? Who wants to sacrifice time and energy trying to carry AA's message to the next sufferer? No. The average alcoholic, self-centered in the extreme, doesn't care for this prospect unless he has to do these things in order to stay alive himself. The pain of hitting bottom, that's what gets us into action. Pain was the unwanted guest at dinner, moved into the guest house, and in the end became our best friend. The big book tells us all of us felt at times that we were gaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Harold?
That list that you just read is so valuable because in one paragraph, Dr. Bob and Bill W. outlined what comprises recovery in describing who wants this except somebody who absolutely needs it to stay alive, to be rigorously honest and tolerant, to confess their faults to another and make restitution, care about a higher power, meditate and pray open-mindedly to a higher power, sacrifice time and energy trying to carry AA's message to the next sufferer. No, the average alcoholic who is self-centered in the extreme does not care for this prospect unless he has to do it to stay alive. So that little outline really gives a very nice picture and helps me a lot to talk to new people. And as you've said many times, Joseph and I were talking earlier today about the fact that the pain that people feel when they first consider getting sober is so valuable, because it is that energy that prods us on to do the things that we need to do in this struggle, this life and death struggle. So chapter 7 says a lot about what not to say, what not to do, because if we do things too early, we will ruin the opportunity later when the person is actually ready. And a lot of what they're getting at there is the fact that when a person is in pain, that's a special opportunity, a special opening to achieve some of the difficult things that they're going to need to save their lives. Joseph.
As alcoholics, we tried various schemes and plans to limit our drinking. Only wine, only beer, different flavors of all kinds. We would drink only after the sun was over the yardarm. Only on the weekends, we would swear off everything holy and everything unholy. We were alcoholic and would inevitably get glorious, mind-numbing, and falling down drunk. Until we acknowledge our powerlessness, our lives remain unmanageable. Denial is not just a river in Egypt. Denial is a symptom of the disease, that it's a trick of the mind that, contrary to all conceivable and indisputable facts, we continue to maintain the illusion of control. There's always someone who's willing to manage our lives, everybody but us. When we admit we were powerless and that our lives had become unmanageable, we put a name on it. We put our name on it. We take ownership of the problem. To quote Pogo the Alligator, we have met the enemy. And he is us. At the close of a particular AA meeting, we circle up and someone started, "Let this circle represent what we could do together, that which we cannot do alone." Recovery programs are we programs. I get drunk. We stay sober. The we includes God, a sponsor, and the fellowship. The Big Book explains the idea that somehow, someday he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. Hell, you say. The delusion that we are like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. The romance of the drink. I suggest to new sponsees that they only have to break off that they'll have to break it off, that it stopped working for them a long time ago, to get themselves a Ronco idea smasher and how to break off the romance of the drink for dummies guide. What's that? You got to lighten it up a little bit, you know? Rule 62, don't take yourself so seriously. Oscar Wilde said it. Life is much too important to take seriously. And of course, AA is life and death. So how much more do we have to be a little on the light side? What SEP accomplishes, it gets over our denial and brings us into reality. This is the only step that has to be done perfectly. All we have to do is willing to change is one thing, everything. We have to be willing to change our playmates and our playgrounds and our most basic behaviors. We have to be willing to be honest. Our attitude towards the way we live life must change if we are to get and remain sober. Our pain humbles us. We are teachable. We can be directed by a sponsor. We can learn from the fellowship and be guided by God overcoming our addiction. This becomes clearly apparent in the second and third steps. Our pride needs to be dismantled. Self-centeredness and extreme selfishness, we had to come to know that we were not in charge. We are not bad people trying to get good. We are not weak people trying to get strong. We are sick people trying to get well. To some, this idea has made all the difference. Harold?
That makes such a big difference to me, made in early recovery and continues to make a difference. We're sick people trying to get well. And, of course, the program strongly suggest that we pray for others when people, when we get aggravated with others, take a look at our part and then pray for others, see others as also as sick people trying to get well. When someone does something very unexpected and off the wall, I have a sponsor who helps me look at that person as a sick person. You know, it may seem at first that they're being mean, being vindictive, being crazy, but really, the anger, my anger, turns into sadness as I think of that person as really sick. And that's the process that's supposed to take place. The anger turns into sadness as we see it for what it really is. That's a sick person. Joseph?
I think if you look on a scriptural reference, step one is about having a broken heart and a contrite spirit.
There you go.
And it's related to a more simple understanding, the understanding of children. When I first got into AA, my wife insisted I was an alcoholic. I insisted I was not. We negotiated, and I was willing to go to any length to prove that. I went to therapy. The therapist, after a while, said, "Why don't you not drink for a year?" And I said, "That's crazy. I can quit any time, just not today." So the ex-wife gave me the ultimatum. You know, it's always cheaper to keep her. You're either going to go to AA or I'm going to divorce you. And I said, "But I'm not an alcoholic." And she said, "That's fine. Until there's an Assholes Anonymous, I need you to go to A&A. And I went, but I came in late, left early, didn't really hear what you people had to say. Alcoholics, aren't those the people that live under the overpasses and cardboard boxes and the Denisons and Skid Row? I wasn't nothing like that. I'm a really bright guy, and, you know, I'm the master of my fate and captain of my soul.
And I have a job.
I have a business. I couldn't keep a job. I had to have my own business. I wouldn't hire me. And I turned out to be the worst employer. I'm the worst employer you'll ever run into, I'll tell you. I wouldn't work for me in a heartbeat. But until the divorce came down, and it was really rough. I lost everything overnight, everything. There was a warrant out for my arrest for assault. I slapped her glasses off. I didn't even touch her, but there was a little bruise on her nose, man, and that's all the lady needed. She closed down my business and took a chunk of money that you would faint if I told you how much it was. And she had police come over the house, text a relative can have you committed if they claim that you might be a threat to yourself and to someone else. And four big bulls came into the house and grabbed me. You know, your first instinct is to fight, flight or fight, and I couldn't run. So instinctively it would have been a fight, and thank goodness the Lord gave me grace. And I was able to, I relaxed. I just relaxed. And I was able to talk.
It is very fortunate, time of grace, because I've heard so many stories about the condition that people end up in when they resist arrest.
And they're coming for me for mental illness. So they don't know really what to expect.
Yeah.
You know,
one man that I worked with and interacted with for a long time was apprehended in a motel room, and they suspected drugs, and he was young, he was like 21, and not that bright, hadn't figured out very many things. He wasn't a hardened criminal, but he was just not that bright.
Not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Well, he ended up a quadriplegic after they got finished with him.
Mm.
And couldn't even swallow. He had to have a tube going into his stomach and lived the rest of his life in a very fancy wheelchair. Wonderful mind, but most of his body would not function normally.
It broke his back.
Quite a story. So I'm glad you relaxed.
Yeah, me too. I went to the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist, you know, they're holding me tight to see what's going to happen. They didn't want the psychiatrist, and finally we're talking to the psychiatrist, and I told the psychiatrist, are you familiar with the rule of thumb? Have you ever heard of the rule of thumb, Harold?
Oh, yes. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's English common law that back in the day that you could hit your wife with a switch no thicker than your thumb. And there would be no criminal charge. You were allowed to do that as long as it was not thicker than your thumb. That was the rule of thumb.
That's right.
Yes, and so I told the psychiatrist he never heard that before. He said he did, but I couldn't tell. He never, you know, the professional guy. He didn't want to show that somebody was smarter than he was, kind of deal. But he didn't know. So he went to my ex-wife. She was waiting for me to be locked up. She had the VA, everything all set up. Because she figured after all the money she had took from me, I would have unhinged me, which was pretty close, because it was like 12 years of savings she had taken. You know, you steal someone's money, you steal their life. And but I got over it. I made the money back and all that. The point is, I was beaten into a state of reasonableness. I'm a tough guy, and if you're an alcoholic like me, you're tough. It took what it took to get me into the rooms. Let me finish up with this. When first we meet, we can avoid the streets. Step one is designed to admit powerlessness, an emotional, painful admission of powerlessness, hopelessness, bankruptcy, and a sense of utter defeat. The realization of how truly unmanageable our lives have become because of alcohol. Overcoming denial that all their best efforts to staying sober had failed. If your sponsee is resisting this step, have them write more examples of powerlessness and unmanageability. Speaker meetings may help them identify the addiction. Explain to them that prayer is a powerful tool, and to ask them to pray for the willingness to be willing. Willingness is like a mustard seed. If it's a good seed, it will grow. And AA is a good seed.
The willingness to be willing. That is so valuable, and so many times I've used that with a new person. And most people, even those with a lot of intelligence and resistance, those seem to go together in my experience.
Yes.
You can't be too dumb for this program, but I've met many people who are educated well beyond what's really healthy, but they are willing to be willing. If they're not willing, they're willing to be willing. So
I tell them to keep it simple, A, B, and C. A, don't drink. B, go to meeting. C, work the steps. D, repeat until dry. It's not a brainwashing as much as it is a dry cleaning. I'm going to end with this, Harold, if I may, the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. The third step prayer.
We've got about 45 seconds. That was a great a great conversation tonight. I really got a lot out of this, Joseph.
Well, thank you, Harold.
Thanks for having me on.
You're more than welcome. This is downloadable. If you didn't want to join us or later on, you can go to the MP3, and it's step one. We just posted the sixth tradition to the website. I think you'll find that enlightening and fun to read.